trigger warning. We touched briefly this week on themes of sexual assault and suicide within this episode, so listener discretion is advised. Friends, Romans, history nerds, lend us your ears as this week on A Nice Cup of History Tea, we cover someone who is arguably a historical superstar, an A-lister of the past, a non-living legend, Julius Caesar.
You all right there, Carrie?
I'm a little bit excited, sorry.
Join us on a trip to the start of one of the most influential civilizations in history, the Roman Empire, to meet a man who was never actually an emperor, but who paved the way for what was to come.
And in this week's Ridiculous Death, we learn why you should always take care when juggling a pair.
I enjoy the rhyme.
Thank you.
So, ready your men, raise your standard high, find a map to the Rubicon, and let's
Let's get
get historical.
historical. So, the first thing to note is what Rome was like at the time. We're going to go through things in a very broad and uncomplicated nutshell.
Yes, please. Very uncomplicated.
Legend has it that Rome was founded by twin brothers Romulus and Remus. There was a disagreement over a wall, Romulus killed Remus, Romulus won, and so Rome was named after him and he became the first king. I'm just going to flinch in folklore, but we did say it was going to be broad.
Very broad. The line of kings continued through to 495 BCE or AD when King Lucius Tarquinius Superbus,
Ooh,
or
well done.
I didn't even practice that.
Oh, I'm so proud. I'm so proud.
Enjoy that. It's not going to happen again. So we'll call him Tarquin because it's a cool name.
Yeah, that's the anglicised version of it.
Yep. He was frankly a bit of a douche, also known as a tyrant, was killed. The people weren't too chuffed by this. He was an aggressive leader who expanded Rome's territories, sentenced senators to death, and was very much in favour of capital punishment or the death penalty.
His people eventually tired of his brutal regime, and the tipping point arguably came when his son, or the king's son raped a noblewoman called Lucretia. She turned to her family, who refused to help her against the king and his son. She then turned to other members of the nobility and her extended family, and when she couldn't take the shame anymore, she took her own life.
God, that's horrid.
It's awful, but she would have been seen as shamed or damaged goods. So she had no more prospects, and she was not getting any help whatsoever from her close family.
Her cousin, she actually had one nice person in her family, vowed revenge for her and swore that he would end the monarchy and free the people of Rome from tyranny. He led a coup against Tarquin, and when the army refused to support their king, he was forced into exile and later died in battle against his former people at the Battle of Lake Regillus.
Regillus. Close though.
Cool. Her cousin was called Lucius Junius Brutus. Remember that name.
From that point, Rome became a republic with two elected consuls sharing the supreme power with the support of a senate. The plan was that no single person could have total power, and because absolute power corrupts absolutely, there would be no more tyrants. The territories of Rome became free and equal.
Now, there's no such thing as true equality in human nature. It's a nice concept, but we just aren't wired that way. Someone will always come out on top. There will always be those who have more and who want more. It's the nature of competition. Try as we might, we can't rule that out of our DNA completely.
And that's the case here. Whilst the notion of the Senate and consul was a great idea in theory, there were still ruling families who could allegedly trace their lineage back, not just to the founding of Rome, but to the gods and goddesses themselves. One such family was the Gens Julia, whose status in the Roman Senate pretty early on, with Gaius Julius Iulus being the first of the family to be made a consul in 489 BCE or BC. They could allegedly trace their lineage back to a mythical ancestor, Aeneas, who was the son of the goddess Venus slash Aphrodite in the Greek. That divine lineage gave them extra political and financial clout.
There's lots of words in there, Carrie. Well done. I
Thank
don't
you.
know why I'm shocked you're good at this stuff. So glad that you got to say all of the words over me. Just a slight aside, Romans often had a couple of names. There was the,
Prenomen.
as in the first name given by their parents, e.g. Gaius. Then there was the nomen, which was the genus or lineage name, i.e. Julius from the Julian line. And finally, the cognomen, or particular name that defines your particular family branch. Nobody is entirely sure where Caesar comes from. There are a number of different possibilities.
So, for me, for example, if we just took my first surname Ingram, then I would be Carrie, which is my given name. And then because my family line, it's Ingram, but from the family Calhoun, I would be Carrie Calhoun Ingram.
Okay.
Because my line is Calhoun, but my family is Ingram.
Ah.
So you'd be like Emily Muse Bush.
Okay.
Yeah.
Muse.
Yeah, that's...
we're... Family tree stress.
Yeah. Genealogy pain. the Julians, despite not being massively politically powerful at the start of the time we're focusing on, were one of the lines that allegedly formed part of the 100 men created as the first senators by Romulus, named the Fathers of Rome. Their families then became the Patricians, fathers, ruling families, those of the founding fathers. Might sound somewhat familiar to some of our listeners over there in the USA.
Yeah, so that's kind of like the background of Rome and the time of which we're kind of talking about.
Yeah, it sort of sets the scene as to what had happened just beforehand. So by this point, Rome is now a republic, no more kings. They're all trying to be free and equal with the Senate and the consuls.
Yeah. So now let's get to the man himself, shall we? Gaius Julius Caesar was born on either the 12th or the 13th of July, 100 BC. A nice round number there. Caesar, we like it. His father was also called Gaius Julius Caesar, because why not? Was the governor of the province of Asia, which was Western Anatolia.
Anatolia, yes.
In modern day Turkey. His mother, Aurelia Cotta, was from the prominent Aurelian line. It is very loose and broad way of saying it, but women were the property of their father until they became the property of their husbands. So her name was her family's name, and very little is known about her beyond her marriage, father and son. They also had two daughters, Julia Major, the older daughter, and Julia Minor, the younger daughter, Julia.
Caesar's family gained some prominence through a powerful marriage of his aunt, Julia, to Gaius Marius, a very powerful statesman and military leader with a number of victories under his belt and no less than 7 terms as one of the Roman consuls. Pretty big cheese. He became involved in civil wars with the help of an ally, Lucius Cornelius Cinna, to fight against one Lucius Cornelius Sulla. they were cousins. And it got very bloody at times.
Aside from the family connections, we don't know a whole lot about Caesar's childhood. What we do know is that in 85 BCE, at the age of 15 or 16, he became head of the household following the sudden death of his father. He was married to Cinna's daughter, Cornelia Cinna, and was named as a high priest of the head god Jupiter, or Flamen Dalius.
Dialis.
Thank you. Together, Caesar and Cornelia had a daughter, Julia. She would be the only child to be recognised as legitimate. Ouch to a later child, much. Ow.
Yeah, considering one of his later children was, like, very, very important in the country they were in. Ouch.
Mm-hmm.
Sulla eventually won the civil war, and Caesar was stripped of his priesthood, his inheritance, his wife's dowry, pretty much everything except his life. In a display of loyalty, however, Caesar refused Sulla's request that he divorce Cornelia and instead went into hiding. There was a prescription drawn up listing the names of those who were a threat to the new regime, including Caesar, and rewards were offered for his capture and death. His mother intervened on his behalf back in Rome, however, and whilst they were not able to restore his original privileges, the target on his back was lifted. Others were not so lucky, and there were mass killings of Sulla's perceived enemies.
Deciding it was probably safer to be away from Rome, just in case Sulla changed his mind, Caesar enlisted in the Roman army, something he would never have been able to do as a high priest of Jupiter. This was a good career move, as he distinguished himself well in the army and won the civic crown, which was the second highest military honour and was usually awarded for saving the lives of fellow Roman citizens. He's a good egg.
It was a good choice going into the military.
Yeah, clever.
As with any famous figure, rumour followed Caesar as much as fact. One of the ones for Caesar was an affair with King Nicomedes IV of Bithynia. He had been sent there on a diplomatic mission to try and get help in the form of a fleet of ships for the military, but it took a long time. Diplomacy can be that way sometimes, but you know what people are like, especially if you rise quickly and people get jealous. So the rumour started to circulate that Caesar and Nicomedes were having an affair, and that's why he took so long. Caesar continued to deny that rumour until his dying day. So now, like, we're not going to go into queer history because I will not talk about my opinions on the idea of queer history. But in this time period with the Greeks and with the Romans, it didn't matter that if you had homosexual sex. What became effeminate was if you were the receiving party, if you were the submissive party. So it didn't matter that he was having an affair with King Nicomedes as long as they weren't saying he was a submissive party.
But someone would have to have been
for it to happen. Yeah, someone would have to have been, but that's why he was he vehemently denied it till the day he died that it ever happened.
Fair. In 78 BCE, Caesar finally got the chance to be able to return home to Rome when Sulla died. Whilst he still had his family name, he didn't have a lot of money beyond his military salary, and so could only afford a house in one of the less desirable areas of Rome, a place called Superba.
Caesar tried a bit of a career change at this point, embracing one of the applauded Roman studies of rhetoric to become a legal advocate for prosecution, which he again excelled at, despite going against some legal heavy hitters of the day, marking himself through his use of detailed and unorthodox analysis of cases, passionate gestures, and skilled oratory. Man could word good.
So basically he became a lawyer?
Pretty much, yeah. A lawyer for the prosecution.
Yeah, fancy. He continued in law for 2 years, even going abroad to Rhodes to study oratory under...
Apollonius.
I know that name.
I think it's mentioned in Horrible Histories.
Probably. A famous professor in art. On his way there, however, Caesar was captured by Mediterranean pirates. They held him for 40 days whilst they tried to ransom him off, and he was apparently quite genial and informal with them during this time. But Caesar was offended by how low the ransom they were offering was. He demanded that the pirates increase their ransom, which they did. They raised it from 20 talents of silver to 50, which they eventually paid to release him.
Caesar is Caesar, though, and he couldn't let something like that slide. And allegedly, as he was being handed over, he joked, he's like, I'm going to come back and get you. And he did. He amassed a private naval force, tracked the pirates down a month later, had them all captured and crucified them. He was lenient, though. He did give them the option to have their throats cut first so that they could die quicker. He's a nice guy.
That's nice of him.
So, yeah. Yeah, it's like, yeah, you're going to die, so let's make it quicker, shall we? Let's work this one out, because, we're buddies.
Yeah. I mean, I'd definitely take the throat slit over crucifixion.
Yeah, you'd literally starve and dehydrate to death. And the agony of,
pain.
So much pain. So he tried that, but then the call for the military was too strong.
Yeah, Caesar soon went back into the military. He was too good a soldier and tactician not to. When Mithridates,
the sixth... Eupator.
What's Eupator mean?
It means, the son of. So he's Mithridates, the son of Mithridates.
Okay. The then king of Pontus, modern-day Turkey, declared war on the Romans. He raised a private army of auxiliaries and troops that were not Roman citizens but fought alongside them to combat him.
Yeah, so if you're a Roman citizen, you've got all of this, all of these privileges for being a Roman citizen, but you could have, the French Foreign Legion. Weren't technically Roman, but still fought with Romans.
Mm-hmm.
When he got back to Rome, Caesar was elected as military tribune, which is a rank above centurion, but not quite as high as legate. So kind of like a captain level, not quite high, sort of pretty high.
But a high officer, high. But yeah. Not the highest officer.
It was a pretty big deal and marked the start of his political career. He was then later elected as a caester, or a public official, who helped to audit other offices. It was mostly administrative, with some links to military command, and although it was the lowest rank of political role, you had to be a caester in order to advance, so it was a good thing for Caesar.
Sadly, the same year he was elected caester, in 69 BCE, both his aunt Julia and his wife Cornelia died. Following his wife's funeral, Caesar left Rome and went to Hispania, for the Iberian Peninsula. Legend has it that whilst he was there, he came across a statue of Alexander the Great and realised that when his age. Alexander had conquered most of the known world, which made him feel a little inadequate. Same, Caesar, same.
Yeah, if you ever want to feel inadequate, just look at how old you are and what Alexander the Great had accomplished by that point.
I mean, we're almost 10 years from when he had conquered Persia and everything.
I've yet to be called a living god. I'm working on it. he returned to Rome. Oh, gosh, that was my Elmo. Sorry.
Elmo?
Elmo, that was my Elmo. My Elmo cracked.
Oh, no, not your Elmo.
I just want to bake. He returned to Rome in 67 BCE and married Sulla's granddaughter, Pompeia. That didn't end well, however, and we'll come back to that. Caesar's political star continued to rise in the meantime, and he received a promotion in 65 BCE, then ran for the position of Pontifex Maximus, the chief priest of the state religion, like the Pope in a way, which is why another name for the Pope is the Pontiff, just FYI.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's a little random fact there. During his time in office as Pontifex Maximus, he was accused of involvement in a plot discovered by the then Marcus Aurelius
Cicero,
through Lucius Sergius Catilina to try and seize control of the Republic. We aren't sure if he actually had any part in this conspiracy, but the accusations did not lead to any formal action against Caesar.
Funny story. At one point, whilst that was all being discussed in Senate, Caesar was sitting there reading a private note that came through, and Cicero was like, "Oh, this is terrible. We're discussing about this, and you're reading this private note. Like, what? You're not even paying attention." And Julius was like, "Yeah, I'm reading this private note." And Cicero was like, "Wow, what's so important? Want to share with the class?" So Caesar walked up to Cicero and showed him the note, which was written by Cicero's sister, which was a love note because she was Caesar's mistress. He was like, "Oh, that's awkward.
Oh, that's gross."
Caesar was elected praetor, a high political office relating to being a commander of an army, and he was made governor of Hispania Ulterior, which is the western part of the Iberian Peninsula, which is like parts of Spain and Portugal. At this time, his new wife Pompeia and his mother Aurelia led the rites for the female-only sacred ritual of Bonadia, a goddess of chastity and fertility. The rites were led with the help of a special priestess, or the goddess of home and hearth, Vesta, known as Vestal Virgins. No men were allowed to view these sacred rites, not even the Pontifex Maximus himself. It was strictly women only.
That's cool. That's badass.
Yep.
They created this.
Yep. That's it. It's only. So they oversaw these rites, and it was just purely just women.
Mm-hmm. So it was a wee bit naughty when
Publius Clodius Pulcher.
What a name.
Yeah.
I don't know whether I love it or I hate it.
Yeah, it's kind of a...
It's nice to say.
Yeah, Publius.
Publius Clodius Pulcher. He disguised himself as a woman and gained access to the rites with the intention of seducing Pompeia. This was not only sacrilegious with him being a man, but doing it to seduce the wife of the Pontifex Maximus was seen as a huge offence to the goddess. A big, big no-no.
Yeah, you've got to
have some bollocks to do that.
Yeah, which, you know, considering it's female-only thing, irony.
Yeah.
He was put on trial, charged with incestum, which is a sexual act that violates religious purity. He was also accused of what we call incest as well.
Okay.
He damaged the relationship that Rome had had with the goddess. This was a capital crime. Caesar divorced Pompeia, not because he believed she was guilty. He didn't believe that she was guilty, but he couldn't have such scandal associated with the office of Pontifex Maximus. Pulcher's trial lasted for months, and he nearly screwed himself over by lying about not being in Rome on the day of the rites. Like, he was caught red-handed, but he tried to say, "I wasn't even there." In the end, he was acquitted because of bribes paid to his jurors by the richest man in Rome, Marcus Licinius Crassus. We're trying not to think. There's a song in Horrible Histories called Minted that's all about Marcus Licinius Crassus. So I knew as soon as I said that name, you were going to get it in your head.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Think of Bonkers, the song.
Dizzy Rascal
Bonkers, and they've changed that to Minted. And it's...
Yeah.
We can't. Whilst this was ongoing, Caesar had approached Crassus separately. See, Caesar was in a lot of debt to the creditors due to his lifestyle and to keep up appearances for his political and military advance without having his inheritance to fall back on. Crassus agreed to pay off some of his debts and was guarantor for others, but he wanted something in return. Crassus was politically opposed to military general
Gnaeus Pompeius Magnus,
or Pompey the Great.
Caesar had a bit more financial freedom now and was able to leave for Hispania Ulterior. Whilst there, he commanded his troops in the conquer of a couple of local tribes, which earned him the title Imperator, meaning commander. It was only an honorary title at that time, however, and Caesar wanted more.
His military victories entitled him to a special parade on his return to Rome called a triumph. That was basically a parade that sanctified their victories, making them blessed by the gods in the eyes of the Roman people, and further exemplifying Rome's military might as something divine. The problem was, Caesar wanted to be a consul, which was the most senior position in the Republic at the time. He could only do that as a private citizen. If he had the triumph, he would enter the city as a soldier, not a private citizen, so he would not be able to stand for consul. So he had to choose between what he had earned and what he truly wanted.
Caesar tried his luck and asked to stand in absentia, meaning he could be a consul without having to come back to Rome as a private citizen. So he could still hold his military power, but it was blocked by, someone else could do the triumph. So the triumph could happen, but then he would come back separately and be a private citizen. This was blocked by an influential senator at the time called Cato. Caesar made his choice. He chose the consulship and he re-entered Rome without triumph as a private citizen.
That's quite a big thing to be like, I've earned this thing, but I'm not going to celebrate it because I want something that means I can't.
Yeah. It's like you've got to choose between, like, you've gone through all this work, this hard work, this blood, this guts and gore. You've lost people and you've worked really, you've literally bled for this.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're just like, fine.
But you can't have the recognition for it.
Yeah.
In 59 BCE, Caesar was elected consul. So he got it, which was good. Alongside Marcus Biblius.
They got some cool names, haven't they?
Whilst in post, he tried to reconcile the ongoing disputes between Crassus, who he was still indebted to, and Pompey. Together, they formed an informal alliance with enough money and power to control public businesses, which became known as the First Triumvirate.
Triumvirate.
Oh, I was close. Rule of three men.
It sounded very Latin, what you said.
Thank you. That's what I thought. I try and be Latin. I shouldn't be Latin. I can barely be English. Pompey cemented the alliance by marrying Caesar's daughter, Julia. Caesar furthered his own political power by marrying Calpurnia,
his final
wife, though not final dalliance, who was the daughter of another senator.
Yeah. So Caesar's daughter, because Caesar's name was Julius, his daughter was called Julia.
Yeah.
And the triumvirate passed legislation to redistribute public lands to the poor and increase the military presence in the city of Rome. The other consul, Bibulus, wasn't happy, and he tried to say bad omens meant that these rules shouldn't be enacted. But he was driven away from the forum, had a bucket of shit thrown over him, and his attendants were beaten and had their symbols of office broken.
Actual shit.
Actual excrement. Yeah.
Actual beat.
He was standing outside of the Senate area and there was a big crowd around him and he was saying all these things. So they're like, nah, and they just literally started flinging poop at him.
Nothing says disrespect to them having shit thrown at you.
He actually said, kill me rather than have me face this disrespect.
Ah, fair one.
But they kind of dragged him and took him home. He hid away at home for the next year or so, occasionally issuing proclamations about bad omens. But they did nothing.
Imagine that. You're at home and be like, I release this proclamation. No.
The signs aren't right. Bad omens, bad omens. Sorry, Bibulus. I apologise.
Caesar continued to grow in power, gaining governorship over
Cisalpine,
Gaul, or modern-day northern Italy, and Licerium?
Illyricum.
Northward, the Balkans. He also later added
Transalpine Gaul.
Southern France to the list. His governorship should only have been 1 year as per law, but it was set to 5 years. And once his term as consul ended, he knew it wasn't exactly going to be popular. And so Caesar left for Gaul.
He was still heavily in debt, so he decided to go back to the military career he knew well and increase his funds by conquest and adventure. Fearing an attack on Rome by warlike Germanic tribes, Caesar raised two new legions, bringing his control to 6 in total, and defeated the allied Sequani, Averni, and Suebi tribes. Yeah, we're going to have some big words at this next bit. You thought that the Romans were bad? We've got some Gallic names.
Cool. There's going to be a lot where I pause and Carrie speaks. So I am still here. Carrie will just be saying words. In response to the northeastern tribes began to mobilise, and Caesar took them on, defeating them bit by bit, sending one of his legions further north to conquer the tribes there, near Britain.
Meanwhile, in Rome, Political turmoil was rife, and the alliance that Caesar had created between Pompey and Crassus was at risk of becoming undone. In 56 BCE, Caesar met with Pompey and Crassus in the town of Lucca near Pisa to renew their alliance as a triumvirate. This was known as the Lucca Conference. So basically, he'd left, they were bickering, he was like, come on, let's bang your heads together.
Pretty much. Caesar went back up north to complete the conquest of Gaul, though he didn't stamp out resistance completely, but he now had himself a base in the north from which to launch further campaigns, and his eyes turned to a small island nation of tribes, which he alleged had helped one of his enemies, Britain. That'd be us.
A Germanic tribe had tried to push across into Roman-controlled Gaul in around 55 BCE, so Caesar built a bridge across the River Rhine, went over into Germanic territory, kind of slung his dick around a bit, just basically marched up and down with his big army, and then went back across the river and dismantled the bridge.
that is very much like, look at me.
So this is what I got, you can't get it. He then finally decided to launch a raid on Britain. He didn't really know the land or the people though, and he kind of made it no further than the beach.
He destroyed a couple of villages, then went back to Gaul for the winter. He came back the next year with a bigger army and managed to encroach a little further, formed a couple of alliances with the southern tribes, but had to quickly return to Gaul due to poor harvests that were causing unrest and revolt amongst the natives. Caesar never again set foot in Britain.
Yeah. He landed in a place called Deal, I think, off the coast of Kent.
Fair. Yeah. What place is the land? Off the coast of Kent.
Yep. But there was a couple of tribes there, and I think they were the Brigantes and the Catavallone that he dealt with. But, it didn't exactly go well for him.
We need to have tribes again. Why don't we have tribes?
It wasn't really one unified kingdom. It was lots of little ones.
Yeah, because we're a great unified kingdom now.
Fair point. The Gallic tribes were divided. Oh, I get all the big words.
Woo!
The Gallic tribes were divided, which made it easier for Caesar to conquer them. The biggest threat came from the tribal leader Vercingetorix, who attempted to unite the tribes under one banner against Caesar in 52 BCE. He defeated Caesar at the Battle of Gergovia, but Caesar's decisive siege victory at the Battle of Alesia forced Vercingetorix to surrender. While some minor skirmishes still occurred, this pretty much marked Caesar's conquest of Gaul. We know a lot about this period because of first-hand contemporary accounts, including by Caesar himself. Though, take his account with a pinch of salt as you read it, because he was kind of trying to promote himself after all. But it's kind of cool that our evidence about what Caesar did came from Caesar.
That's really cool.
Yeah, he wrote his own book.
Especially in like that. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I bet it's in Latin, isn't it?
Yes. Well, some phrases in Greek, I believe.
Of course.
Well, you can speak both.
Why not?
Yeah.
So, whilst away in Britain, Caesar received the tragic news that his beloved daughter Julia had died in childbirth. His grief was allegedly great at hearing this. Ever the politician, however, he offered his hand of his great niece in marriage to the now widowed Pompey, but this was declined. I mean, my daughter's dead. I'm really sad, so marry my niece.
Apparently, Pompey
would be quite sad too, I'm guessing.
Well, he was allegedly very, very taken with Julia and very much in love with her, and he was loyal to her all the way through.
Aww.
And I don't think he married again after she died.
Why are we shocked to think it's nice that men did the basic thing of staying with one person?
The bar is not historically very high. It's really not.
Oh, it's really sweet that he didn't have loads of wives and loads of mistresses and loads of bastard kids. That's cute.
Or boyfriends.
Yeah.
The first triumvirate came to an end in 53 BCE when Crassus was killed during a failed invasion of Parthia, which is in modern-day Iran. Legend has it that he was made to swallow molten gold.
And ironic
death for his wealthy life.
Oh, the pain.
If you thought Viserys's... Spoilers. If you thought Viserys's death in Game of Thrones was bad, like, imagine having to swallow it.
Oh, the pain.
Yeah. It was also alleged that later on his head was severed and used as a prop in a play. Yeah. Political violence in Rome escalated after this, and Pompey was named sole consul as an emergency measure in 52 BCE. So it's like things had gone mad, so Pompey was there. The law of 10 tribunes was passed that year, giving Caesar the right to finally stand as consul in absentia. This sharing of power over distance did lead to a breakdown in trust between Caesar and Pompey, however.
A proposal that Caesar be recalled to Rome to help with political unrest, now that Gaul was conquered, was vetoed. Fears around the civil war started to grow as Caesar began to return south, building his troops as he went, heading towards Italy, where he had allies waiting with their own troops. The Senate grew nervous and proposed that both Caesar and Pompey be disarmed. So stripped of their right to gather an army, this had enough support, but was rejected by one of the sitting consuls.
In early 49 BCE, Caesar sent an offer to the Senate to renew the idea that he and Pompey disarm, but this was again rejected. On the 7th of January 49 BCE, Caesar was declared an enemy of the Roman Republic, and a decree called Senatus Consultum Ultimum was issued, giving senators power to use the full extent of the law to safeguard Rome against what they feared was coming. Caesar.
Caesar deliberated on what he could do. He wanted to return to Rome in triumph and secure a second consulship, but he had been declared an enemy, and whilst actual prosecution was unlikely due to his popularity, exile was certainly a possibility, and he couldn't have that. So, on the 10th or the 11th of January, 49 BC, Caesar is reported to have said,
"Alea iacto esto,"
let the die be cast, and he and his men crossed the river that formed the northern boundary of Italy, the Rubicon. Even nowadays, the phrase crossing the Rubicon has come to indicate reaching that point of no return. The Roman world was about to change.
Apparently, it took him a lot of time to deliberate actually doing it. And when he said, let the die be cast, at that point, he was like, I have no choice. I have no choice. I have to do this. Pompey led a number of senators in an escape south. Caesar took control of the main communication lines to Rome and tried to open negotiations, but this was unsuccessful. So he did try.
Mm-hmm.
Caesar continued south with the aim of capturing Pompey to force negotiations. Pompey escaped to Hispania before Caesar could get to him. Caesar followed him, leaving Italy under the control of one of his generals, Marcus Antonius, or Mark Antony. So when you hear certain names in history, you're like, huh, I know that guy.
Caesar marched his men for a punishing 27 days before leading them to victory against Pompey's lieutenants. He then turned east and engaged Pompey directly on the 10th of July, 48 BC, at the Battle of
Dyrrhachium,
which was nearly a devastating defeat for Caesar. They engaged again later the same year on the 9th of August, 48 BCE, with a decisive victory for Caesar against Pompey at the Battle of
Pharsalus
in Greece. Pompey and his few surviving men fled to Egypt.
Caesar returned to Rome in triumph, where he appointed leader with full magistrative powers of the state, called a dictator. Mark Antony was his second in command as master of the horse. Caesar was elected consul for a second time, but resigned his dictatorship after only 11 days, choosing instead to pursue Pompey to Egypt and end this once and for all.
He arrived too late and found that Pharaoh Ptolemy the 13th, had ordered the death of Pompey. On his arrival, Caesar was presented with Pompey's severed head and a seal ring as a gift. But Caesar was not pleased and allegedly receiving these gifts with tears and had the men who assassinated Pompey put to death.
Whilst in Egypt, Caesar became embroiled in a civil war between Ptolemy XIII and arguably one of Caesar's contenders for most famous historical figure of the time, Ptolemy's sister, wife and co-regent, Cleopatra VII.
I mean, that whole sentence, Ptolemy's wife and sister.
Yep. Egypt.
Yay.
Legend has it that she snuck into his chambers wrapped in a carpet to try and convince Caesar to side with her. Whilst portrayed in later popular culture and art as a great beauty, Cleopatra's real seduction actually lay in her wit and intelligence. So if you look at statues of her, she's not what you'd think of as a beauty. It was her wit and her intelligence, and this coupled with the fact that Ptolemy had ordered Pompey's death, convinced Caesar to ally with her.
He helped her to withstand the siege of Alexandria, then the capital of Egypt, founded by and named after Alexander the Great, from whom General Ptolemy Cleopatra was descended. Caesar was destined to be linked to the guy after all, it seemed.
So, now we move on to one of the biggest, but not the most dramatic love affair for her, but one of the biggest love affairs in history.
Mm-hmm.
Caesar and Cleopatra. When Pompey had arrived in Egypt, Pharaoh Ptolemy and his advisers, Pothinus and Theodotus of Chios, believed that killing Pompey would please Caesar and make him and Rome a powerful ally and trading partner.
Kind of makes sense in, like, when you think of it.
Yeah,
in
it's like,
them, it kind of makes sense.
Pompey's an enemy, he's fleeing, so yeah, let's do this. They ordered two former soldiers of Pompey, Achillas and Lucius Septimius, to assassinate the now disgraced general. As we mentioned before, this didn't please Caesar at all. Like, see, Caesar, he still respected Pompey. They were still friends. He was like his son-in-law. You know, they still respected each other, and Caesar was like, if it's gonna happen, it's gonna be me that does it. But he had
Yeah.
that choice taken away from him.
Caesar started by calling in debt that the previous pharaoh, Ptolemy the 12th, owed of 10 million
Denario.
denarii, which was 7,997,463 pounds, or 9,624,938 pounds and 72 cents today. And
So,
declared that he planned to mediate the dispute between Ptolemy XIII and Cleopatra. Ptolemy wasn't impressed, however, and laid siege to Alexandria.
I mean, even by today's standards, that's a lot of
That's a lot of
money.
money.
Yeah, and he's like, okay, you killed him, you've annoyed me, I'm calling you debt now. Just cripple him.
Yep, a lot of debt.
Pothinus sent secret orders to Achillas and his men to launch an attack on the royal quarter in Alexandria. During this time is when the alleged Cleo in a carpet incident occurred, and she and Caesar started their romantic relationship. Caesar declared that Ptolemy and Cleopatra should co-rule, but Ptolemy rejected this idea and incited a riot against Caesar. Meanwhile, the secret orders from Pothinus were discovered, and Caesar had him executed.
As all this was happening, one of the Egyptian princesses, Arsinoe the Fourth,
Arsinoe.
Arsinoe, I was trying to be
It's an
nice.
unfortunate name, isn't it?
The fourth, Ptolemy's younger sister, escaped and joined the
Egyptian.
Egyptian army, being proclaimed queen and thereby deposing Cleopatra.
Yeah, if one sister wife betrays you, let's choose another sister wife.
She arranged the murder of Achilles and assumed command of the army, renewing the siege of Alexandria. Things weren't looking good for Caesar when they poisoned the water supplies, meaning he had to dig wells to survive. However, hope came in the form of naval reinforcements and supplies.
Caesar led an attack on the Great Harbour and burned the Alexandrian fleet. But because of unfortunate winds, the fire got out of control and accidentally spread to the biggest casualty of the war, the Library of Alexandria. Moment of silence for the library, please. Still hurts, man. Still
I don't
hurts.
think we can will ever be able to comprehend what we lost in the burning as historians, what was lost at the burning of the libraries of Alexandria.
No. There is, in the game Assassin's Creed Origins, you actually go to the Library of Alexandria. You meet Cleopatra and Caesar, but you go to the Library of Alexandria. And when I was there, I had to put my controller down for a few minutes and just take in the fact that even though it was a digital rendition, I was in the Library of Alexandria. If I had a time machine, that's one place I'd go. I wouldn't be able
Cool.
to understand a freaking word that was written on any of those scrolls, but I would go.
Orders were given to repair as many
Shifts?
ships as possible. Being just 27, Caesar readied his own force of 19 more ships and 15 other ships and lined them up off the coast of Pharos Island. It was close, but the Romans won the naval battle and then took the Pharos Island. Caesar fortified the defences on the island but needed to control the bridge to the mainland. A sudden attack from the Egyptian army ended in confusion and defeat for Caesar, with his ship being boarded and the man himself having to strip out of his armour and swim to shore in safety, holding important documents in his left hand above the water as he swam.
Yeah, so he'd already burnt the library down, but God forbid he should ruin those important documents. Anyway, during the skirmish, Caesar had taken Ptolemy prisoner, and the Alexandrians offered an exchange of Arsinoe for Ptolemy, as they had tired of her. They basically got bored of her autocratic regime. Ptolemy was released, and he promptly decided to continue the attack on Caesar.
Of course, did. A relief force arrived in 47 BCE, which helped turn the tide in Caesar's favour. The Battle of the Nile in February 47 BCE was a victory for Caesar, with many of the surviving Egyptian forces fleeing by boat. Ptolemy fled to the
Fled to the fleet. He fled to the
I am trying my
You're
hardest.
doing really, really well with the pronunciations. You are doing really well.
But it's the English I'm struggling with. Ptolemy tried to flee also, but in the chaos, his ship became overloaded and capsized, drowning him in the Nile. Oh,
Unfortunate.
in it.
Caesar lifted the siege of Alexandria and placed Cleopatra on the throne to co-rule with her younger brother.
I'm going to take you for that one.
That's fair enough. You know what? Fair cop. To co-rule with her younger brother, Ptolemy the 14th. When one Ptolemy won't do, another Ptolemy. So Caesar stayed in Egypt for a further 2 months, during which time Cleopatra fell pregnant. That's a wedding ring. Arsinoe was captured and marched through Rome as a punishment before being banished to the temple of Artemis in Ephesus. She would later be executed on the steps of that same temple on the orders of Cleopatra and her new Roman lover, Mark Antony.
Oh, we know that name.
Yep. Yes, we do. It all ended a little bit dramatic for them too.
Caesar returned to Rome with Cleopatra coming to visit on a few occasions, staying in his villa just outside Rome on the other side of the River Tiber. In 48 BCE, Caesar had again been appointed dictator, and following his return from Egypt, he'd won a further military victory in the Middle East against the king of Pontus in modern-day Turkey. He then went about defending the remnants of Pompey's centurial supporters. Though it wasn't smooth sailing, as he was defeated in 46 BCE by Titus Liberius at Rusipina. He eventually defeated one of his biggest enemies in the Senate, Cato, in April 46 BCE at
Thapsus,
which led to Cato taking his own life.
So dramatic, isn't it? It always seems that they do.
They are dramatic.
But then again, honour was a massive thing to them, so it kind of makes, it doesn't make sense, but it kind of makes sense. Caesar was appointed as dictator then for 10 years, and whilst he was in Hispania defeating Pompey's sons in battle, he was elected in absentia as consul for the third time in 46 BCE and the fourth time in 45 BCE. For the fourth time, there was no second consul elected with him. It was just Caesar.
He chose not to proscribe his enemies, putting bounties on them. Instead, Caesar pardoned the ones that were left, which removed any real public opposition to him. He returned to Rome and threw lavish public games and celebrations, though it was considered by some for these to have been in poor taste, as his victories were against fellow Romans, not foreign forces.
He was very careful, though, in that he marketed some of his victories as victories against the Africans rather than against Roman forces in Africa. So it wasn't against his own people, and he was very careful not to put effigies of Pompey or Cato or anything in it, so that people wouldn't see the Romans there.
Fair one.
Caesar was in his mid-50s at this point, so the time had come for him to create a will. He named his grandnephew, Gaius Octavius, as his adopted son and heir. So a lot of the things in the Roman Republic and later Empire is that they would adopt people as their son and give them all the rights and things of a son if they didn't have one. So Gaius Octavius was his adopted son. And then he named Decimus Junius Brutus Albinus as his successor should Octavius die before him.
That's a name.
I'm glad I got that in one go.
During his time as dictator, Caesar set up a new constitution which strove to strengthen central government in Rome, bringing order back to the Republic and uniting the provinces. He did this by increasing his own authority as dictator and even reformed the calendar.
The calendar originally constituted 10 months, beginning in March, with the onset of spring. That's why we have September, October, November and December. They were meant to be the 7th, Sept, 8th, Oct, 9th, Non and 10th, Dec, months of the year.
Makes no sense why they changed it, but also does make sense.
It does make sense. This was the calendar allegedly set by Romulus, and it followed the moon, so that's why there weren't so many of them. That's why they were following the moon. The calend of the month was the beginning, the nones were the end of the month, and the ides was the middle of the month, and it often followed the lunar rather than the solar cycle.
Caesar introduced the idea of the leap year with an extra day every 4 years in February. He amended it carefully so as not to move the dates of any important religious festivals, but ended up creating a 446-day year for the first year of his consulship. He changed the days at the ends of each month, leading to 30 to 31 days for most.
He has landed well again. I've got this next paragraph.
Good. Looks like it.
July was originally known as Mensis Quintilis, the fifth month, and August as Mensis Sextilis. So the calendar would originally have been Mensis Martius, Aprilius, Maius, Junius, Quintilis, Sextilis, September, October, November, December, with 304 days to the year. Two extra months had been added, January and February, to the end of the year to sync up with the solar year and lunar months early in the Republic. And Caesar added a leap year. So the months were lunar, but the year was solar. And then because the solar year is technically 365.25 days, every fourth year, there's an extra day. So we have the leap year thanks to Julius Caesar.
Which is next year.
Yep, is the leap year.
Yep.
Later, Mark Anthony changed the name of Quintilius to July in honour of Caesar.
Sextilis.
Oh, that's cool. Yes. Sextilis was later named August after Caesar's adopted son and heir. But we digress.
Caesar ordered a census to be taken, forcing a reduction in the distribution of grain to the citizens of Rome. So like, some people were getting way too much, like way more than they needed, mm-hmm. and other people weren't getting enough because of that. He also decreed that jurors in trials could only be selected from the Senate or equestrian ranks, those families that could afford to support horsemen within the military, the highest and most influential ranks. He restricted the purchase of certain luxuries through the sumptuary law, and then passed another law that gave reward to families with higher amounts of children in an attempt to encourage the repopulation of Rome.
That all makes sense.
He actually, like, the stuff that he did makes sense, and they were good for the common people,
yeah.
which made him unpopular with the Senate.
Yeah, I can see that. He built a number of public works, including the Forum of Caesar, with a temple to his family's divine founder, the Temple of Venus Genetrix.
Yep,
Venus, the mother of his line.
He also made plans to distribute land to a large number of military veterans, which did not go down well with the people who already owned that land.
Yeah, there was lands with vineyards and things, but it was rich people who owned a lot of the land. So he was like, okay, we're going to parcel this land up and give it in sections to military people. And they were like, well, this is my land. He's like, yeah, but, you know, they don't have a home to go to, and they kind of fought for us. So the OG home for heroes. He set about starting to make land reforms and ordered the rebuilding of Carthage and Corinth, abolished the tax system, and allowed cities to collect tribute from conquered lands how they chose, instead of using Roman intermediaries for the collections. So people would collect in their own way rather than having Romans come up and say, pay us your taxes. So it kind of made Romans look less like the angry taxman. He also had plans to construct an enormous temple to Mars, a great theatre in his name, and a library which would match the now destroyed Library of Alexandria.
Wait, temple to Mars?
Yes.
As in the planet?
That was named after the god of war, Mars.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was like, a temple to Mars? That's really hot.
All of our planets are named after Greek and Roman gods.
That's really funny. I just envisioned that he was trying to build this temple to a planet.
No, it's temple in the name of the god of war, Mars, because he was a warrior.
Fair one. His statue was placed alongside those of former kings of Rome, marking him out to be on their level. And he even had a golden chair, not unlike a throne, in the Senate, making him more than the others. He was also granted permission to wear a triumphal dress, which is the popular image of the toga and laurel wreath, whenever he chose, basically rubbing it in with everyone at all times what he had achieved, but also reminding them of what he was capable of. Personally, I think he kind of deserves that, because he did. It's not like he's putting this stuff on without doing anything. He did a lot.
He's earned it. Although one thing that he did do that was kind of like, ooh, really? Especially if you know the mythology and realise how petulant the goddess is about being compared to people. In the temple of Venus/Aphrodite, mm-hmm. he put a statue of Cleopatra next to her.
Oh, gosh.
And it's like, oh, that's stupid. He was awarded permanent tribunal powers in 48 BCE, which even allowed him to veto the Senate.
Ooh.
So the people that once vetoed him, he could now veto them.
Yeah.
Whilst making him sacrosanct, basically divine and untouchable. He was a sacred person. Anyone who attempted to obstruct him was captured and stripped of their position and office within the Senate.
That's hardcore.
Yeah, now we're getting into like proper dictatorship, aren't we?
He appointed a number of new senates, boosting the Senate to a total of 900 members. Appointment for them from the lower classes and making them loyal to him. So the Senate was no longer
aristocratic.
I knew that. My brain was just like, absolutely not. Impartial body. They were mixed classes and under Caesar's power. He even awarded himself censorial powers, naming himself prefect of the morals. in 46 BCE.
Yeah, so he's putting things in place to help the public, but also make himself more and more powerful.
Yeah, it gets dangerous.
Yeah. Coins were minted with Caesar's likeness on them, and he took steps to increase the number of magistrates and being to strengthen the Roman provinces into one cohesive unit under him, the beginnings of the Roman Empire. But he was never named emperor. That's an important point that often gets misconstrued. Caesar was never emperor of Rome. In fact, there's one story that in the festival of Lupercalia, which we covered in our Valentine's Day episode, it's Valentine to sacrifice this goat. Hey. Mark Antony actually walks up to him and went to place a crown on top of Julius Caesar's head, and he acted all angry and battered it away as if to say, "Don't you dare crown me, I am no king." And modern historians kind of believe that might have been staged, because a lot of people at that time were basically saying that he was trying to make himself king. So he and Mark Antony staged this thing to say, "I will never be king."
Oh, okay, fair one.
Yeah.
In October 45 BCE, Caesar resigned as sole consul and helped facilitate the election of two successors, restoring the original consulship. In February 44 BCE, he was named dictator in perpetuity. He had to bestow a large amount of power on his generals. The likes of Mark Antony, though, as he was frequently taken out of Rome to help solidify power elsewhere within the Republic, as well as visiting his son, Caesarion. Named Caesarion for Caesarion?
Caesarion means like the son of Caesar.
Oh. In Egypt with Cleopatra.
Yeah, but it is believed that like one of the potential origins for Caesar's name is because he was taken out of his mother in a different way, and he tried to like take Rome in a different way, and like an unnatural birth. So he was, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Caesarion has a link to Caesar.
Cool, I wasn't going insane then.
No, not this time.
No.
Caesar began to prepare for war with the Parthian Empire, passing a law in his absence to allow him to appoint all magistrates, consuls, and tribunes, so they were no longer elected as representatives for the people, they were Caesar's representatives. This was the final straw.
Several senators had become increasingly discontented with Caesar and his reforms, and a plan was put in place to assassinate him. Legend has it, a legend later solidified by Shakespeare in his play, Julius Caesar, that a soothsayer told Caesar that his death would come for him in the middle of March.
Sorry, that's my spelling mistake. I apologise.
No, it's fine. You go ahead.
Beware the Ides of March.
He was due to appear at a session of Senate on the 15th of March at the Theatre of Pompey, the 15th being mid-month, or the Ides of March. His own wife asked him not to go that morning as she had a bad feeling. But Caesar shrugged it off and went anyway.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you've got a soothsayer saying, beware of the Ides of March. He'd not been feeling well in the run-up to it. He was off his game a little bit. And his own wife saying, don't go, I have a bad feeling. I've had bad dreams. And he's like, whatever.
Whatever's, mate.
You kind of listen, wouldn't you?
Yeah, there's signs.
Yeah. Mark Antony had heard a very vague report the night before from one of the conspirators, Servilius Casca, about the plot. He had tried to head to the Senate to help, but this had been factored in. Like, they thought he was gonna try and stop it. And Gaius Trebonius was sent to intercept him on the walk up to the theatre. Mark Antony later fled when he heard the commotion inside, scared he might be next.
Caesar arrived at the Theatre of Pompey, ready to address the Senate. Once inside, he was approached by Tullius Cimber, who alleged to be presenting him with a petition to recall his brother from exile. Caesar was then summoned by the other senators crowded round, pretending to offer that. He was surrounded by the other senators crowding around. Not summoned, surrounded. Very different things.
Yeah. Pretending to offer their support.
Caesar waved Cimber away, but Cimber grabbed Caesar by the shoulders, pulling his toga down and causing Caesar to cry out, "Ista quidem vis est? Why, this is violence!" So he's like, you're standing there, he's hearing the petition, and all of a sudden someone just grabs his coat and pulls his hand. What's going on here? Caesar, who had spoken to Antony the night Casca, who had spoken to Antony the night before, pulled out a dagger and made a stab at Caesar's neck. Caesar, soldier, was too quick and turned around and grabbed Casca by the arm and shouted, "Casca, you villain, what are you doing?" And Casca cried out in Greek, "Help, brother." So he was crying out to all the other senators around him.
How old was Caesar at this point?
He was born in 100 and this was 44. So 64.
Oh. Not on sounds
64 or 56?
56. Yeah.
I don't know, it goes backwards and that confuses my brain. Yeah.
So what's 100 minus 44?
56.
Yeah, use 56.
Okay. So that was, there you go, that's Maths by Emily and Carrie, the dumbed down version. Caesar was swarmed within moments by the group, all stabbing at him. Amongst the group was one that Caesar had raised up and treated as his own, Marcus Junilius Brutus. He whose ancestor had initiated the coup against King Tarquin and ended the Roman kingdom, now participated in the act that killed Julius Caesar and effectively ended the Roman Republic.
Yeah, so Tarquin was overthrown by Lucius Junius Brutus. Caesar was in part murdered by Marcus Junius Brutus.
Brutai.
Caesar fought to get away, but he was blinded by his own blood. He slipped and fell, lying on the front steps of the theatre portico, unable to defend himself as the conspirators continued to attack. A total of 60 men are alleged to have been involved in the attack, and they were actually that frenzied that they were stabbing each other by mistake. Caesar himself was stabbed a total of 23 times. Physicians, according to historian Suetonius, later established that it was the second wound to his chest that had been the fatal one. He also, it's said that Brutus actually stabbed him in the groin.
That's mean.
They were literally just getting in and stabbing anybody that they could.
Nobody knows for sure what Caesar's last words were. Short of getting either a time machine or a Ouija board and a Latin dictionary, what is reported by Suetonius is that his last words were the Greek phrase
Kai Sitechnon,
or you too, child, aimed at Brutus. This was had later been altered to the Latin phrase Et tu, Brute, and you, Brutus, made famous by Shakespeare with the line Et tu, Brute, then fools Caesar.
Well done.
Yeah, horrible history is teaching me things once again.
I was going to leave you for a moment whilst you think of Matt Baton and that song. As Caesar lay dead, many of the conspirators fled. Brutus and a few others marched to the capital proclaiming, "People of Rome, we are once again free." The people, however, had locked themselves inside their houses.
Sorry.
Rumours had spread of what was taking place. So they're like, there's murder afoot. There's a frenzy. Things are happening. There's blood all over.
No thanks, mate.
Theatre. They're like, we're going to lock ourselves up. But yeah, Brutus is like, we're free. And they're like, nope. Caesar's body lay on the floor of the Senate for nearly 3 hours before it was removed.
Caesar was cremated and the crowd that gathered started another fire, which damaged a number of the neighbouring buildings.
Yeah. They were that annoyed with what had happened, like that angry that Caesar was dead. They started throwing clothes and bits of wood on the fire to make it get out of control. And it just, voomf, and just spread.
I mean, that's one way of, like, pissing people off by, like, not doing anything really big.
Yeah.
They're like, you know, they could start a fight, they could start a war. No, they're just going to make this one thing get bigger.
Yep.
That's really clever.
Passive-aggressive.
Isn't it? Jesus. On the site of his cremation, the Temple of Caesar was later erected. Yeah. The altar of which still survives today. A life-sized wax statue of Caesar was erected at the Forum, depicting the 23 stab wounds. Why would anyone want to see this wax figure, this dude with 23 stab wounds?
I don't know, but just a special shout out to Sally. See, she still does laugh at the word erected.
What?
In one of the early ones that we did, I think Tutankhamun, Sally said she'd listened to it and that she found it funny, the fact that you were laughing at the word erected. So she does it all the time.
And it's now that she's telling me, so the other two laughs at the word erected.
We're genuine.
And now we've said erected a lot in this.
Well, I'm surprised you didn't laugh at the 69 BCE.
Oh, mate. No, erected. Erected is just a funny word. Erected.
There is a scaffolding company called Luke in the Midlands, whose tagline is, "For a better erection." That's amazing, right?
Wow. I know,
right?
Wow.
Promo for them there. They are actually a good company. In the chaos and retribution that followed, a series of five civil wars were fought for control of Rome, including a war between Mark Antony, who had then sided with his new lover Cleopatra, talk about sloppy seconds, and Octavian. Octavian won, Mark Antony and Cleopatra both took their own lives, and Caesar's son Caesarion, also known as Ptolemy the 14th, no, 14th, 15th, Ptolemy the 15th, was assassinated. Gaius Octavius took control of Rome and turned it from republic to empire, becoming the first emperor, later giving his name to the 6th month, now 8th, of the year, Emperor Augustus. He deified Caesar, proclaiming a comet that shot across the sky at the time of his funeral to be a sign from the gods that Caesar had gone to join them, making Gaius Julius Caesar a god and sanctifying a legacy that lives on to this very day.
That's really cool. He did so much.
He did. And it was just a really cool coincidence that at the time of his funeral, when Octavius was giving this massive speech, this comet just flew across. And I think it went for about 6 days, just flew across the sky. I think it was Halley's Comet.
Wow.
Yeah. Just happened to be going by at that particular time. And Augustus was just like, Caesar, God.
And look. Everyone who killed him was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, they were like, oh, this was a mistake.
We should not have done this.
Yeah.
This is not okay.
Octavius was not nice to the people that did it. There was much retribution. It was bloody and it was swift. It was not good. If you want to learn more about it, there's two really, really good books. One about Caesar, like, himself, and one about the Julio-Claudian dynasty, which was from Julius Caesar to Emperor Nero. And that's called, the Julio-Claudian book is called Dynasty, and the one about Caesar is called Rubicon, and they're both by Tom Holland. Not the Spider-Man pew 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 Tom Holland, the historian.
Spider-Man pew pew pew,
yeah, Tom Holland. Technical term for it. Yeah, he's a really good historian, and the way he tells it is, it's historical fact, but he tells it like a story. So you read it as prose, and it's actually really, really good.
That sounds really fun.
Yeah. So, that was Julius Caesar.
He's cool, like...
He was a busy fella.
He was, but kind of... I don't think he deserved it. Like, he wasn't doing anything really bad. Like, yes, he probably got a little bit too... I wouldn't say power-hungry, but I feel like he should have stopped giving himself all of these titles.
Yeah.
Because it kind of made him seem like a bit of a twat.
He took it a step too far.
He kind of deserved a lot of it, because he did a lot of good.
He did, and he worked really hard, and he did well. I think he just let his ambition get the better of him.
Yeah.
Not... And other people let their greed get the better of them.
Yeah.
So, this week's ridiculous death. Or do you want to do random fact first?
Ooh. Ooh, this is fun. I don't know.
Decisions.
Do-do-do-do-do. Carrie's random fact.
Okay, my random fact is actually relating to the Roman calendar. The word for month was mensis, which is where, it's like, means moon cycle, which is where we get the word menses or menstruation from. We menstruate, it is our moon cycle.
Do 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 do, carriage round fact. I liked that fact.
Yeah. You're welcome.
As soon as you said menses, I was like, I think I know where this is going. Yep. I think. Yeah. But now, to our OG segment, the segment that has been there from the beginning.
That also happens when people end.
One might say...
We end at the beginning. We open at the close.
Yep. I was going to say that, but then you went... Instead of taking the infamous "we open at the close" quote, you were like, we end at the beginning. We begin at the end.
My bad.
You were funny. Anyway, this week's ridiculous death. So... Let's talk about another Roman dude.
Claudius Drusus.
He was born either year 9 or 12 CE and died between either 20 or 27 AD. He was the oldest son of Roman Emperor Claudius and his wife,
Plautia Augelanilla.
Honestly, when I was trying to read that out to Cariola, she almost weed herself with
Augelanilla.
I mean, that sounds very similar to what you just said.
Yeah, to be fair, it's like, huh?
I think my tongue was like, nope.
It is thought that he died around 20 CE, but it has been suggested that he was still alive in 23 CE because there's some stuff written that has his name in around the 23. So we'll go with 23 for this. Well, he lived until at least 23 CE. He was due to marry the daughter of...
Sejanus,
who we spoke about in this. And there were rumours that he was murdered because of this. Not Sejanus, the other dude.
Yeah. There's a lot of names.
There are so many names. Why?
Lots of people got involved in things. Many fingers in the Roman pie.
So.
Sejanus. He was due to marry Sejanus' daughter.
And there were rumours that he was murdered because of this, but this has been disputed by many historians.
Including Suetonius, which was the one we mentioned earlier.
Yeah, they sound the same. Suetonius, Sejanus. It's the Uniuses, Numinus, Nisnius, Nisnius.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Instead, one day, Claudius decided he wanted to start to juggle with a pair. And, as Suetonius put it, Carrie, you do the quote.
Died just before he came to manhood, choked by a pear which he had playfully thrown up and caught in his open mouth.
So basically he was juggling a pear, threw it up and caught it in his mouth and choked to death. Oh my god, you have all these visions of these like massive Roman soldiers, and he was the eldest son of a Roman emperor, so you have these visions that he was probably a bit of a badass, and he threw a pear in the air and caught it in his mouth and choked.
Also,
like, what,
how small was this pear, or how big was his mouth?
Unless it was like one of these things where it hit his mouth and he bit a bit off.
And yeah, if he just kind of bit it and was like, hey.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'll do a dramatic reenactment then.
That was good. I enjoyed it.
Oh, wow. So, Julius Caesar. We've finally done an episode on Julius Caesar.
We have, and I'm glad we did. It was a good episode.
It wasn't that long.
Well, no. Actually, no. I think our longest one is still either History Awards or the Titanic episode.
Yep. And we call that one, It's So Long, It's Titanic.
Oh, it's so funny.
Yeah, check us out on all of our social media, especially because in 2 weeks from this episode coming out, we are going to be going to Amsterdam. We're so excited. We've spoken about it so much.
Yeah.
But we have a lot of content to come your way. TikToks, Instagrams, Facebooks, episodes after we've been, maybe even a live episode when we're there. We don't know. Things are crazy. But what we do know is that you will not want to miss it. So check us out on social media at Cup of History Tea, pretty much everywhere.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Right. Mm-hmm. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
How do you say bye in Latin?
Vale, I think it means is farewell. Ave atque vale means hail and farewell. Yeah, I think it's vale.
Bye. Bye.